is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, September 25th, 2019. I'm Buster Olney, back in Bristol producing as Troy Farkas. And Troy, I got to tell you, you know, as we go down through this last week, I love listening to games on the radio. And so I'm switching back and forth last night with the American League wild card teams, because that's the game that ESPN is going to broadcast next Wednesday. You know, I listened to the Yankee game. I listened to Jose Ramirez doing his thing for the Indians last night. I listened to the Oakland game late. And I'd say about 12:30, I went to bed, but baseball went on long after I went to sleep.
I know. It was amazing because, of course, I was asleep and I didn't see any of
these. Yeah, you were asleep before the Rays game started in the East Coast.
But seeing everything this morning, wow, what a night of baseball, Buster.
It really was. Rockies, Giants went on and on and on. This is after Madison Bumgarner had a moment at the top of the third.
And Bumgarner hits a high drive to left. It is out of here.
Dwayne Kuiper, NBC Sports Bay Area. You do wonder if that's Madison Bumgarner's last home run in a Giants uniform because of the free age in the fall. Well, these two teams would play on and on and on to the point that they used a combined 25 pitchers between the two teams. Top of the 16th inning, this is what happened.
Pitch to Blackman. And that one's hit well to center. Going back is Pilar, the fence. It is gone! Way out of here for Charlie Blackman. Absolutely crushed it. And the Rockies have broken the tie. They lead it 8-5 in the 16th inning.
5 hours and 31 minutes this game lasted. But you know what? That was just a mere drip compared to what happened between the Cardinals and the Diamondbacks. Last night, the Cardinals led 1-0, bottom of the ninth inning, and this happened.
Vargas hitting right-handed. And he swings. It's a fly ball to deep left center field. And this one ties it. Home run Vargas, 1-1 here on the ninth. A pinch hit home run by the former Cardinal farmhand.
Greg Schulte, Arizona Sports and 98.7 FM. They played on through the 12th inning into the 13th inning. Paul Goldschmidt at the plate.
The pitch. Goldschmidt hits it high. He hits it deep. Left center field. It's a Gunner home run. Just cleared the wall. It got out. Waiting for the umpire to raise the arm, and it's a home run for Goldschmidt. 2-1 here in the 13th.
John Rooney on the Cardinals radio network. But the Diamondbacks would tie the game, and they would play into the 14th, the 16th, the 19th inning. Bottom of. This is what happened.
At his first pitch. And a line drive base hit. This one's over. Scoring from third is Kelly. And Ildemar Vargas, the former Cardinal farmhand, beats the Cardinals in 19 innings here by a score of 3-2.
6 hours, 53 minutes, the longest Major League Baseball game since a 6 hour, 54 minute game between the Rays and Orioles on September 20th, 2013. The Diamondbacks struck out 25 times in this game. The Cardinals, 23 times. Neither had struck out more than 19 times in a game in their franchise histories, respectively. And by the way, Diamondbacks, Cardinals scheduled to play at 1:40 local time, or I guess 12:40 local time in Arizona later today. Boy, I hope those guys are going to be okay. The Brewers and the Reds, Milwaukee closing in on a wild card spot. Josh Hader had a chance to close out the Brewers' win.
Hader, all of a sudden, here it is. He struck him out swinging. And this one is over. He got him with a breaking ball. 2-2 curveball strikes out Kyle Farmer. Dandy tonight. Brewers take game one. Two more to go here in Cincinnati.
Bob Uecker, 620 WTMJ. Even without Christian Yelich, the Brewers just keep on rolling. The Cubs ending an ugly finish to their season. They faced the Pirates last night, a team which hasn't been winning anything. And you know what happened? Bottom of the seventh inning, the Pirates erupted.
3-2. Swinging a line drive down the right field line. Fair ball and headed toward the corner. Osuna is in. Moran is going to score. And Stallings will be held at third. Kevin Kramer with a two-run double. The Pirates have a 3-1 lead.
and they would blow it open in the bottom of the seventh inning and win 9-2. That call from Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. In that American League wildcard race, what a day for Jose Ramirez. He was activated from the injured list because you remember he broke his hamate bone in his hand last month. He had surgery. He was working out last week. He came to the plate in the top of the first inning, bases loaded.
A swing and a drive to deep right field, away, back and gone. How about that welcome back? A grand slam down the right field line. The little man with a big bat has come back to spark the Indians with a grand slam here in the first.
Tom Hamilton, a WTAM 1100, and Jose Ramirez wasn't done. He came to the plate with two runners on base in the top of the third.
And he drives it to deep left. Are you kidding? Way out of here. Two-thirds of the way up the bleachers in left center. Jose Ramirez, two swings of the bat, seven RBIs.
So the Indians won this game 11-0. And as I was listening to that, I was remembering that Boog Shambi, Troy, was in the ballpark last night in Chicago for ESPN television. I bet you after a game done by Tom Hamilton and Boog Shambi with their voices that they have, the booming voices, probably no glasses left. Like all the glasses shattered in the whole ballpark.
Oh man, nothing better than a Tom Hamilton.
Oh, that's awesome. We gotta get him on next week. You know, if the Indians make the playoffs, we will get Tom Hamilton on again. What a great call on that first home run, an even better call on the second one. The Rays and the Yankees and CC Sabathia worked out of the bullpen for the first time in the regular season in his career. Before that, he had 560 starts. He had a good inning of relief, but the two teams would play in extra innings. Bottom of the 12th inning, this is what happened.
Swing and a drive to right field. Back at a Judge to the wall. Rays win! Rays win! Rays win! DeMontoy wants it off here in the 12th. Rays beat the Yankees 2-1.
Dave Wills with a great voice of his own, 620 WDAE. Angels, Athletics, and the Angels had a 3-2 lead, top of the ninth inning. Here's what happened.
He delivers, he struck him out, a changeup, and the ball game is over. So Robles gave up the leadoff infield hit, then got the Laureano double play ball, strikes out Davis, and the Angels hold on and win it tonight 3-2. You can put a halo over this one.
Terry Smith, Angels Radio, AM 830. So you really can't get much closer than where we are in the American League wild card race. You've got the Athletics, a half a game ahead of Tampa Bay, which is a half a game ahead of Cleveland. Three teams within a game of each other. Wouldn't have it any other way. The Astros and the Mariners and Gerrit Cole for his next to last appearance in the regular season. He was incredible. 14 strikeouts over seven scoreless innings. He continues to make his case for the Cy Young Award, and Alex Bregman got a big hit.
Here's the pitch, and he rifles this one to left field. Cutting across is Shed Long. He's on the warning track, looks up, and it's out of here! Right down the line inside the pole, and Bregman with number 40 on the season. Astros lead it 1-0.
Steve Sparks, Sparksy, KBME 790 AM, and Gerrit Cole had a chance to set a record in the bottom of the seventh.
Cole's 1-2 pitch, and that's in there for strike three. 12 strikeout for Cole now, 314 franchise record. Single season for the Astros, breaking the record of J.R. Richard set in 1979.
Yeah, I tell you what, the Astros have a long and storied history of pitching. For Gerrit Cole to set this record, that's impressive. He's talked about it after Houston's 3-0 win.
It's pretty cool. The dugout gave me a nice ovation, and I appreciated that, and so did the Astros fans that traveled. So I just wanted to recognize them and just take a moment with my teammates because they're responsible for a lot of the confidence I have, and that plays a big part. I guess I did pause a moment here or there, but... play 162 of these things, so you just got to keep going. I don't know. I do like do think about it like a little bit, but when I say a little bit, I mean like a little bit. So.
The Dodgers took care of business against the Padres, winning 6-3 with a lot of help from Max Muncy.
Swung on and hit high and deep to right. Going back is Hunter Renfroe to the wall. It has gone a grand slam. Mad Max the Road Warrior hits a grand slam on the first pitch he sees from Gerardo Reyes. And the Dodgers now have opened it up. It is 5-0.
Tim Nevert, AM 570 LA Sports, in the race for the best record in baseball and for home field advantage, the Astros with a solid lead. They're 103-54, two games ahead of the Yankees in loss column, New York at 102-56, the Dodgers at 101-56. The Twins, closing in on the American League Central title, face the Detroit Tigers, and they took care of business.
And the 1-1 pitch, a line drive, base hit, left center field. The Twins are going to take the lead. In his cave, here comes Wade Jr. The Turtle delivers a go-ahead two-run single. 2-1 Twins in the seventh.
Corey Probus, Treasure Island Baseball Network. Final score, Minnesota 4, Detroit 2. 97 wins for Minnesota. In the first game of a doubleheader on Tuesday, the Nationals and the Phillies. And Ryan Zimmerman got a big hit in the bottom of the sixth.
The 0-1. Swing, a line drive right center field. That's falling. It's a base hit for Ryan Zimmerman. A clutch two-out RBI single scoring Adam Eaton. RBI 26 for Zim, and the Nationals score two in the inning and lead 3-1.
And that shoved the Phillies to the brink of elimination. Here was the call in the top of the ninth inning.
3-2 the count. Hudson ready. Here's the pitch to Kingery. Swing and a fly ball into right. Eaton coming in. He is there. He makes the catch. And the Phillies fall to the Nationals today 4-1, and it is the mathematical conclusion of the Phillies' playoff push as they've lost three straight. And the Nationals take game one of this twin bill and wipe the Phillies officially out of the wild card race.
Yeah, it was Scott Fransky, Sports Radio 94 WIP, and you heard some excitement from the crowd there. That was in part because, of course, a guy in uniform on the other team from Washington, Bryce Harper with the Philadelphia Phillies. Here was the call of the end of that game from Nationals Radio Network.
Hudson sets the kick. Here it comes. Swing and a fly ball right field. Here comes Eaton on the way in. He makes the catch. And bang! Zuma, Curly W's in the books. Daniel Hudson records his fourth save as a National. Fernando Rodney and Sean Doolittle with holds in front of him in a win for Tanner Rainey in relief. As the Nationals beat the Phillies for a second straight day, they reduce their magic number to go to the postseason down to two. And at the same time, they have eliminated the Phillies from wild card and postseason contention.
That was Charlie Slows in the first game of a doubleheader on the Nationals Radio Network.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
Game two of the day-night doubleheader. And Brad Miller got the Phillies off to a good start in the top of the first.
Swung on, driven high and deep center field. Robles was playing shallow, going back. He's looking up, and that ball is gone.
Wow.
Dead central for Brad Miller. A three-run home run off Max Scherzer here in the first. And the Phillies with a 3-0 lead.
Wow. That was something.
Sports Radio 94 WIP, Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson. But the Nationals would come back. Trey Turner's been doing a ton of damage lately.
Swing, a long drive. Left center field.
And the Nationals would take it from there to go on to win 6-5. And after the game, after the Nationals clinched a playoff spot, Max Scherzer talked about what it feels like to reach the postseason.
The way the season started, you guys never lost faith in this ball club. Why? What was it specifically about this group?
Because we're good. We're really good. We can play with everybody in this league. I know there's good teams in this league, but we're really good. And we got what it takes to be able to compete with everybody. It's going to take all 25 of us to get into the postseason and see what we got.
What was tonight like for you all, knowing that the stars needed to align, but it did, and now here you are celebrating?
Yeah, it was one of those things like, wait a second. Man, we win, they lose. Like, we're in. Like, so we're going to party tonight. So sure enough, hey, it worked out, and we're partying.
In the other clubhouse, Bryce Harper talked about his respect for the Washington organization.
I got no hard feelings towards them at all. They're a great team. You know, they're a great organization. That's why they're where they're at right now. So it's a great group of guys over there. They play the game the right way. They play it hard. They got a pitching staff to go with it, with a lineup as well. So they're going to be tough to beat. They're a good team, and, you know, that's why they are, you know, who they are.
What hangs over the Phillies is the question of whether or not Gabe Kapler would continue as manager, and Bryce Harper talked about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a conversation that if it needs to be had, then it'll be had. But at this point, he's our manager. And, you know, I think all the guys in this clubhouse back him with what he does every single day as a manager. And, you know, there's guys up above me that make those decisions. So if we do need to have that conversation, then, you know, I'll be all ears.
The Mendoza Line with Sunday Night Baseball's Jessica Mendoza.
And in the last week of the regular season, there is no Sunday Night Baseball. We're all sitting and watching and wondering, Jess, who we're going to see next Wednesday night in the American League wild card game. You've got three teams within a game of each other, with Oakland with a very tenuous hold, a half game ahead of Tampa Bay, which had a great win against the Yankees last night. The Indians with a great win with the return of Jose Ramirez. It was a crazy night. It's going to get crazier down the weekend.
Yeah, who do you have? Who are your two teams you think will make it in?
Not going on the record.
What?
Yeah.
Come on.
No, I think Oakland and Cleveland are going to make it in, because I'm amazed by the Rays. Like, I look at the Rays on paper, and I can't figure out, you know, why they're in this position. but before we get to that a little bit, I want to talk about the team that did qualify for the playoffs last night. How about a big tip of the cap to the Washington Nationals? They started the season 19-31. You know, you had knuckleheads like me speculating on whether or not Dave Martinez, their manager, was going to be fired. You and I were there one weekend, and I asked him, hey, how did you handle that? And he kind of gave a shrug of the shoulders, like, you know, I didn't listen to any of it. But he had to endure that. He had to endure some recent heart trouble. He was away from the team. And so you can imagine why, you can understand why he was so emotional last night after they clinched the wild card berth.
I can't put my emotions in words. I can tell you that right now. But what these guys went through all year, man, it's unbelievable. It really is. I mean, I'm proud of every one of them. And it's not over. We're not over. Hey, we're going to stay in it. We're going to stay in the fight. We're going to stay in the fight.
That from Mass, and Dave Martinez is one of the great guys in baseball, Jess.
You know, and emotional, not afraid to show it, and I can understand. I mean, we've been there with him from day one. We had the Nationals early, even last season, and criticism was at the forefront because really there's a ton of pressure. I would agree the same for Philadelphia in that this team is expected to win because of the talent that they have, and he's kind of gone through a tumultuous, like, up-down. You mentioned it, and you can just feel, right, even in that sound, the emotion that he has, and I don't believe it for one second that he didn't hear or listen to the criticism, because we all know, like, no matter how much you try to ignore it, it seeps in some way, in some form. He cares that he's gotten to this team at this point, but he knows they have to win not only that wild card game, but get past the hump of a division series win.
Yeah, and you would agree with me that that is a dangerous team. If they get through the wild card game, they will be facing the Dodgers, and they can go toe-to-toe with any team in terms of what they have in the starting rotation. Their bullpen's gotten better. Their lineup has been performing well of late, so they'll be interesting to watch. You mentioned the Phillies. The conversation now that they're out of the playoff race will spin forward to what happens with Gabe Kapler. I can't tell you for sure what's going to happen. I will tell you that a lot of evaluators, other teams who are putting their ears to the ground on this one, they think that Gabe Kapler's gone. I think it just comes down to what John Middleton, the principal owner, wants. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surrounded by Phillies fans. I mean, I feel like here in Bristol, Connecticut, but just really all over. And I haven't met one yet that doesn't want him gone. And I feel like that starts to really get hurt. And not that you ever obviously let fans dictate major decisions like this, but at some point, I mean, you think about why Bryce Harper is even on this team. I mean, fans drive a lot of what, you know, ends up happening, especially when it's over and over and over again. And I just don't feel like they're going to recover. I mean, Gabe Kapler from day one has been a frustrating manager for a lot of Phillies fans. Is it his fault that they're in this position? I don't blame him. Has he made all the right decisions? Of course not. But it also falls on the front office of the, you know, Philadelphia Phillies and, you know, a lot of other people as well. But as we know, it tends to come down to the manager, especially once the hitting coach has already been fired. unless they, you know, go ahead and get rid of a pitching coach and everyone else. But I think for Gabe Kapler, it's a hot, hot seat right now.
So the other day in Cleveland on Saturday, I was watching Jose Ramirez take batting practice as he was coming back from this broken hamate bone and the surgery that he had. He was swinging from both sides of the plate, and when it got done, Brad Mills, their bench coach, said, "Well, looks like the same old Jose to me." And he walked away, but you never know when someone's coming back, a hitter's coming back from a wrist injury. And Jose Ramirez is someone in his career who's had a lot of peaks and valleys. So I was really curious, okay, as he's coming back, is it going to be a slow return? Is it going to be a fast return? You can't get much faster in his return than what we saw last night.
Grand salami, right? Right off the bat, switches over, three-run home run. And what was cool to me is, you know, I was watching the game live, and Boog Shambi and Eduardo Perez and Mike Petriello, they put up, you know, this very graphic photo of Jose Ramirez and showing really the surgery that he had with all the stitches. He had the black ties, like, all wrapped around his hand, to really give you an idea of the visual and how quickly he's come back from what is a very serious injury. And then, you know, this is during his first at-bat. They point out the axe bat, how he's now gone to that to help compensate for the lack of strength in that bottom hand from the left side of the plate. And whoa-pow, right? Like, grand slam. And, I mean, when you're around Jose Ramirez, just the type of player he is, honestly, the size that he is, and the numbers he's continuously put out but never has had the respect, my heart just went out to him, and you could see the entire dugout for the Indians. And the game was over in that moment just because their energy, their star. I mean, you could argue Francisco Lindor is you know, probably on the same side of that. But to me, Jose Ramirez, not only getting him back in the lineup, which would have been awesome just anyway, having his energy there, but then to see the grand slam and the entire dugout react showed you this game was done in that moment.
Yeah, and I'm going to show you that I have absolute recency bias, but we just saw the Indians on Sunday night, and, you know, watching the emotion, the dugout, and Oscar Mercado, you know, saying, "I'm the best in the business," as he's running up first base line, and the response to Franmil Reyes and Lindor and now Ramirez, they're playing with a lot of emotion right now, and they'll be really interesting as we go forward. And so will the Oakland Athletics. Last night they lose. What a crazy pitching situation they have today. They announced yesterday that reliever Lou Trevino is out for the year. He cracked a rib while falling in a shower. That's a story that Oakland told us. Okay, I can't verify that. I can't confirm that. But that's what they told us. Blake Treinen, it was so good last year, he's out for the rest of the year with a hip and back issue. So the hero they're reaching for today, how about Frankie Montas, who has been away from the team the last 3 months because of an 80-game PED suspension. He's the guy getting the ball today, someone who's not even eligible to play in the postseason. That's kind of where we are in the wild card race, Jess.
That sounds like September. I mean, that's, first of all, September, meaning you have these larger rosters, you have a whole slew of options that you can go to just in this 1 month alone. But then how important every game is. You're going to utilize someone that really will have zero impact in the team in just a week from now. And so I look at that as, but they's got to win. And so you're going to put anyone you possibly can out there.
Yes.
To be able to put yourself in the best position and save what you have so that you are able to be in a position next week to hopefully host that wild card for Oakland next Wednesday.
So last night, I want to touch on this real briefly as a continuation of a conversation we've been having. Last night we had a 19-inning game. We had a game in which a record number of pitchers were used, 25. I was listening to the Yankees and Rays game, and John Sterling, Susan Waldman were just like, "Oh, my God, this parade of relievers." Everybody in baseball hates this, Jess. It's amazing. Everybody hates the September rosters, the slow pace of the game, which I think lends itself to these really long games. You know, last night, a game almost 7 hours long. It's not official that this is going to be addressed for 2020, but please, I have my hands together like I'm praying as I say this. Please, they need to deal with this.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'll even go a step further, and I don't think you agree with me on this one, but extra inning games. And, I get it. It's not like you want them to end in a tie in September. I don't want them to end in a tie, but there needs to be some address of how extra inning games are handled. I believe this strongly, especially throughout the regular season when you have like 17, 18, 19 inning games. It's rare. 3% of games actually go more than 13 innings throughout the regular season. But in those games, I think it's important that, and it doesn't even have to be right away. Like, I think for the strategy of how teams will then handle things, I think for fans to be able to hone in, whether it's putting a runner at second base. I mean, I felt this last night watching these games, and it's like, oh my gosh, like, we can't just let this continue to go on and on and on, because these teams, it matters tomorrow. Like, they got to be able to show up and can't use every single player, even if they have, you know, their entire 40 for September. What about May? What about June? You know, an August 5th game that's going into the wee hours of the morning. Like, this is unnecessary. And I want that to end as well.
90 seconds left. I'm going to give you three concerns for major contenders. You tell me which of these is the one that jumps out to you. The Dodgers, recent performance, Hyunjin Ryu, Clayton Kershaw, Kenley Jansen. The Braves, Ronald Acuna Jr. Had to leave yesterday's game. He had right hip tightness. Freddie Freeman has a bone spur in his right elbow. He's 3-for-29, one extra base hit since September 11th. And third one, the Astros. Yesterday, Carlos Correa had to leave because of back tightness. Which of those three concerns you the most?
You know, what jumps out to me is, of course, the Dodgers. And, you know, Kershaw and Ryu, I mean, they've given up, I think it's 20 home runs combined in their last six starts. I mean, that's insane to me. And that's where the game has gone, and that does concern me. But I'm going to go with, actually, the Braves. Because if Ronald Acuna Jr., when he came out last night, I mean, I felt like I got punched in the stomach. I'm not a Braves fan, but I'm a fan of baseball. And with Acuna Jr., and it's not that he's out, you know, for some indefinite time. I mean, he'll probably be back in there, but it also makes you realize that the most exciting player on that team and then the best player are both banged up. That gives me concern, because the Braves are not anywhere near the team that they need to be if they don't have Acuna Jr. and Freeman. I do feel like the Dodgers can go and win games. They've got Walker Buehler. They've got other guys. Like, I'm not as concerned with Kershaw and Ryu as I am with Acuna and Freeman.
Yeah, Acuna and Freeman, the big dogs. All right, Jess, enjoy Bristol.
All right, thanks, Buster.
We'll be back in a moment with Paul Imbecchides, but first, they say the best offense is a good defense, and that's especially true when it comes to the fuel you put in your car. It's time to help keep your engine running like new. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline is engineered to defend against four main engine threats: gunk, wear, corrosion, and friction. It's our most advanced fuel ever, protecting your engine like a solid stiff arm, a huge hit, or a last-second block. Like defensive lines, not all premium fuels are the same. Now that's fuel for thought, and if you're a Fuel Rewards member, you save at least 5 cents per gallon on every fill-up with gold status. Not a member? Download the Fuel Rewards app or go to FuelRewards.com to join and never pay full price for gas again in engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Hembo is Paul Imbecchides, a honcho on the show Get Up. He says he's the honcho, but we won't quibble about that for now. And Hembo, I'd say, you know, normally I'd feel like you as a Phillies fan would be a little depressed today, but you just got married. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Buster. As the Phillies elimination yesterday was no fun, but that is a very small and insignificant rain on what for the last week and a half for me has been an amazing parade. I got married last Friday, did a whole week in Aruba, just laying out, baking in the sun, just as you envision yourself in retirement, I'm sure. And I thought about you every day. That was a joke I obviously did not, but it is good to be back with you boys, and I'm really looking forward to the postseason here coming up.
I really hope your significant other does not care about the Phillies, just to torture you throughout your marriage.
No. That's not an issue. Like I said before, we go back and forth with football very passionately. Baseball, that's my hobby, and she'll watch her Bravo shows on the side, so we're good there.
There you go. All right, let's get to your topics of the day and start with a guy who, as I said in the show's open, man, the Astros have this tremendous history of pitching. Nolan Ryan, J.R. Richard, Mike Scott, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So for him to set the franchise record for strikeouts is pretty cool.
Yeah, Gerrit Cole put together one of the most uniquely dominant seasons we've ever seen. Buster, first, he's done it with efficiency. Cole has struck out 39% of batters he's faced. That's the highest rate in a season in Major League history, a mark previously held by Pedro Martinez in 1999. He's also the only pitcher to record a 300-strikeout season without a single complete game. Secondly, He's done it by attacking the strike zone. Yesterday marked Cole's 14th game with 10 strikeouts and one or fewer walks. That's the most in a season since the mound was moved to its current distance in 1893. And lastly, he has done it with smoke. Cole has struck out 155 batters on pitches 98 miles per hour or faster. Noah Syndergaard ranks second. He's only done it 61 times. His 155 strikeouts with those pitchers are more than 28 teams have recorded.
Who would you pick? American League Cy Young Award winner, Garrett Cole or Justin Verlander of today?
I would pick Justin Verlander. He in my judgment, has been slightly more dominant and a good bit more durable in terms of his usage. I just think his ability to eat more innings for me is the tiebreaker.
Yeah, we said yesterday that Garrett Cole will have to take the consolation prize of the biggest contract in the history of baseball for any starting pitcher in the offseason after he doesn't get the Cy Young Award.
Not bad. What would be quite funny is if Verlander somehow won the MVP, but Garrett Cole won the Cy Young Award.
There you go. The Phillies, as we say, a disappointment considering all their spending.
Yeah, I gave you these notes at the beginning of this season, but I think they bear repeating today because the Phillies' elimination from the postseason yesterday serves as yet another reminder that winning the offseason does not promise winning results. Dating to 2001, 66 different teams had increased year-over-year payroll by at least 30%. 27 teams improved their win total, 34 decreased their win total, and 5 remained the same. The average team improved its win total by 0.3 wins, a practically negligible amount. This year, the Phillies, the Brewers, and the A's were those teams, and while two of those will likely make the playoffs, none improved the way their payroll jump would have suggested.
Does Gabe Kapler get fired?
Gabe Kapler gets fired. He might get fired before Sunday, frankly. I think he's absolute toast.
Based on what I've heard, and I don't know anything for sure, but if I had to bet the family farm back in Vermont, it would be on that Gabe Kapler would be removed as manager.
I'd be stunned
otherwise. The Brewers have played great since Christian Yelich went down. What do you got on them?
They're in line to reach the postseason for the second consecutive year, and their play after the calendar flips to September is the biggest reason why, Buster. In 271 games played in March through August, Milwaukee owns a run differential of minus 17 over the last two seasons. But in September and regular season games in October, they lead all of baseball at plus 112 in 49 games. Now, their lineup has more than carried its weight, but the pitching has been the key to both runs. The Brewers' team ERA of 2.73 in those 49 games is more than half a run better than any team in baseball during that time.
Before you go, I just want to let you know, it looks like Troy Farkas might be out of the friend zone. We don't have the official confirmation of that, but a really interesting situation developing. We'll have to revisit that again next week.
Troy, I'm a married man now. I'll be passing along marriage advice here shortly.
Oh, man, can't wait.
It's time for some inside heat on Baseball Tonight.
And Jesse Rogers covers the Chicago Cubs for ESPN Chicago, which is insane right now. A crazy collapse punctuated by that defeat last night, Jesse, against the team that never wins, the Pittsburgh Pirates. At this point, I got to tell you, it feels like it's like beating a dead horse and talking about what's gone wrong for the Cubs. What do you think?
So it's a lot of different things. This was a situation that's been sort of trending in this direction. I think I wrote in my column the other day, it's kind of things were bending and then it finally broke. And I think the baseball gods kind of did it with an exclamation mark over this past week. Just said enough is enough. We're not going to tease you with a wild card berth. We're not going to even tease you with a chance at the wild card late in the final week here. We're going to knock you out and tell you exactly what you need to do. And that's basically to upend your culture, change over your roster, find a new thing. After this thing ran its course, there's not a lot of teams that make the playoffs four straight years. We know the Dodgers do. So you got to give them some credit, but all things come to an end. And unfortunately, this run has apparently come to an end. It looks like they'll change managers and maybe, again, a culture change as well. I think the long story short is that this team got a little spoiled. We're talking about the players. They got a little spoiled and couldn't find that it factor that we see some of these other, using hungry as that word, we know, in baseball, you got to be careful using that word, but we'll say it. It does feel like other teams have a little bit more going for them in that department than the Chicago Cubs, who are still basking in the glow of that championship, though they shouldn't be anymore.
Yeah, the collapse makes it easier for the front office to basically blow it up and do whatever they want. As you mentioned, we've been talking about it. You know, there's nobody expects that Joe Maddon is going to be back as manager next year. But I want to ask you about this. Speaking of the front office, our friend Alex Speer of the Boston Globe, who's tapped into the Red Sox organization, wrote a speculative column yesterday about Theo Epstein and the idea of him returning the Red Sox. Look, we talked about that possibility in the first 2 days after Dave Dombrowski was let go by the Red Sox. There are so many potential obstacles to that happening. Whether it's his contract or his relationship with the Red Sox ownership, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What's your read on the possibility of Theo going back to Boston?
If this was a couple years from now, I'd be more inclined to believe it. First of all, I think you're right about the relationship with ownership, but let's say those things can get worked out. He still has two years left on a big mega deal here. The organization in some ways is a mess coming off of this season. He might be leaving it in good hands, but he wouldn't be leaving it in good standing the way things have ended here. So again, if this was 2 years from now, I could see it. I just don't know about now, and I just don't know if he wants to revisit the Red Sox again without, I guess, part of an ownership deal. I mean, I don't know why he'd go backwards in that sense with the same owners there unless he's getting a piece and things change. But I don't know the inner workings over there. I just know that he'd be leaving an organization that he did great with but not necessarily in good standing in this moment. So it seems a bit far-fetched, but Theo's a different cat than a lot of people, and you just never know what's going on. You know, I think family-wise, he wouldn't mind moving back there, but that's just one angle to many layers to this thing. So I think it's a long shot, like you would just naturally think, but I guess you can't rule anything out.
No, and I got to tell you, if they had won the World Series this year and this possibility, popped up at the end of the World Series, they go, you know what? That could happen. Now, if I'm Tom Ricketts and I got Theo under contract for the next 2 years, and, you know, we've seen this steady decline, frustrating decline for the team and big changes ahead. I don't know if I'm Tom Ricketts, if I'm letting that happen. Like, I'm like, hey, we have real issues here that we need you. I made you the highest paid general manager in the history of baseball. I need you.
Yeah, they're already scapegoating Joe Maddon. We know that, right? So, okay, we're going to put this on Joe in some ways. It happened on his watch. We get that. But you didn't exactly set him up for success this year. You need to set the next guy up a little bit better moving forward. Be real interesting who they bring in. I think the type of guy they'd like to bring in is obviously someone that can handle the National League game. That's number one. But also someone that inherently can relate to the whole millennial generation and deal with what comes with being a manager of the Chicago Cubs, specifically the media, the pressure, all that. But I think Joe worked his butt off at relating to these players. But after 5 years, I think he sort of lost his touch with them. And that happens. That happens all over the place. So I think the next manager is going to be real interesting in terms of that, like, and also in terms of accountability. I think that we talk about players maybe being a little bit spoiled after all the success they've had. Joe's a little bit more laid back. They might, by nature, go with the opposite guy. We see that often. But in this case, they might need it as well. A little bit heavier hand who can inherently communicate with this generation and obviously has to handle the National League game. I mean, you know who I just described, Buster? I just described Craig Counsell to you. I think Craig Counsell is an excellent manager. He's proving it again this year. Not that Joe isn't. I'm just talking about the situation facing the Cubs right now.
All right, 90 seconds left. Two quick ones for you along the managerial hires. A lot of speculation about our colleague David Ross. What's your read on that?
Yeah, I think Ross still has family considerations to deal with. His family's down in Florida. He'd have to, upend and change that dynamic for himself. So I'm not sure that he's quite ready, but he certainly brings those qualities that I just talked about. Other than never having managed in the National League, or managed anywhere, but especially the National League. Don't forget, when we praise Aaron Boone, when we praise Alex Cora, those were American League first-year managers. You know this, Buster. You've been around a long time. Especially now, the way bullpens and starting pitchers are built, you have to know exactly how to navigate yourself around a pitching staff. And those first-time managers, whether you played in the NL your entire career or not, that's a difficult task. But I do like those other qualities, a little bit heavier of a hand from a David Ross. We know what he was like as a teammate. He had an edge to him. I just don't know if he's ready, Buster. I don't know if he's ready to, with his family.
I'd say this, you know, and Rossi hasn't asked me. If he were to ask me, I'd say, look, if you want to manage, you have to seriously consider your windows now. If that's right. that important to you. And if his family situation is pulling him in a different direction, then tip of the cap to him. You know, he's obviously going to make the decision that's right for him.
I know he and his agent are going to discuss exactly that. You know, if not now, when will I get that next chance? And that's a big question mark when you're not a star player. You know, a star player might get some leeway. But David Ross needs to capitalize probably sooner rather than later based on his standing in Chicago.
Yep, and last one, among the core players, I think the most likely guy to be gone is Chris Bryant, who, you know, we reported last winter that they were open-minded about dealing him. I think this winter they pushed that conversation. What's your sense?
Yeah, no, I think they do, but I also think they're going to push some other conversations as well. I don't think they picked a lane just yet on what this offseason is going to look like. When you have this kind of an epic failure, I think you need to sit back. I joked on the radio the other day, Jed and Theo need to, you know, take a week and then go into a conference room, shut that door, order breakfast, lunch, and dinner for 3 days straight and come out with a new game plan, because it's a new situation. It's not a rebuild, but it's a new situation, new manager, new culture. That takes a lot of time and thought. Obviously, I'm sure they've started that already as they've seen this thing go south, but I think I don't think there should be necessarily one path. I think they need to explore several. And that could be keeping Chris Bryant for all I know and moving somebody else that would surprise us a little bit more.
All right, Jesse, thank you for doing this. Hang in there. I know it's going to be a busy couple weeks for you.
You got it. Take care, Buster.
Because we're tired of getting yelled at for somebody else's work.
Bias!
And would rather get yelled at for the stupid stuff that we do.
And this is why the Seattle Mariners will play in the 2016 World Series.
Oh, what a loser!
This is the Baseball Tonight Power 10.
And it is the last Power 10 of the year because, of course, we're going into the playoffs next year. And, Troy, no need to do it once we get into that arena. This week seems fairly set because of where the playoffs stand. I got Astros 1, Yankees 2, Dodgers 3. You're going to rubber stamp that, yes?
Astros 1, Dodgers 2, Yankees 3.
Yeah, that makes no sense. Braves, Twins, Brewers, 4, 5, and 6. What do you got?
I got Braves, Twins, A's.
Wait, so the Brewers are winning every day. They've responded like champions after losing Christian Yelich, and you got them below 6?
Yeah, yes, I do. I'm going by records here. Yes, the Brewers are the hottest team in baseball right now, but I'm going by the records here. I can't put the Brewers at 6.
All right, you're wrong. We got Cardinals at 7, Athletics, Indians, Rays in that order, 7, 8, 9, 10. What do you got?
7, I've got the Rays. 8, I've got the Cardinals. 9, I've got the Indians.
Okay, who's your number 10?
The Brewers.
Okay. Just for the record, I'm glad you did that without putting the Rangers in there. I was wondering if at the end...
I did not.
You might try to slip it past us and get Texas in the top 10 as a projection into next year.
They did not make it in there, Buster. It hurt me to lead the Nationals out, especially the night after they did what they did. I mean, I struggled so much with this Power 10. There's just so many good teams right now riding momentum, and you can have the discussion about whether momentum means anything going into the postseason or not, but all I know is there's a lot of really good teams out there right now.
I think momentum means something. I mentioned the Indians. It's interesting sort of watching them come together and having Shane Bieber at the front of the rotation. That'll be good.
Bleacher Tweets.
Okay, Buster, let's fire through some Bleacher Tweets here. First one this morning comes from Mike Redmond at M_Red13. Who's the odd man out of the Yankees infield in the ALDS? Is it Gio Urshela or Luke Voit?
Just depends on injury and whether or not a guy's hot. For example, last night, Gio Urshela hit on the hand by a pitch. The Yankees are hoping he's okay. We'll see how he's feeling as we go into the postseason.
Debbie Gammons Brown at D. Gammons Brown. Bigger collapse for a Theo Epstein team, the 2019 Cubs or the 2011 Red Sox?
Yeah, you'll back me up on this, Troy. 2011 Red Sox. I mean, that was a historic collapse in how many games they gave up in the standings. And it led, of course, to the departure of Terry Francona. It led to the departure of Theo Epstein. I don't think anybody looked at the Cubs coming into the year as a slam dunk favorite to get to the World Series the way we looked at those Red Sox.
Very true. Michael Preston at MickP1979. Given his history with young player development, do you think Joe Maddon would be a good fit for the Padres if he doesn't continue with the Cubs?
Possibly, and Joe Maddon is someone who certainly is going to appeal to ownership, whether it's in Philadelphia or whether it's in San Diego. I've been wondering about Artie Moreno of the Angels. If the Angels decide to make changes, you know, sometime in 2020, Joe Maddon is someone who was with the Angels for a lot of years. Artie knows him. He might be a fit there.
Next one from Kevin Bolin. Can't wait for this question. Best one of the day. At LK Bolin, what would the Rangers have to do to become a contender again other than firing GM John Daniels?
Yeah, you, Troy, I'll give the floor to you because you are, you know, invested in this answer.
Well, I want to sign some big name free agents. I have no idea what the Rangers cap space is like right now, but I would love to get in on the Garrett Cole sweepstakes. Love to get in on all the other big names out there. So I think that's what we have to do.
I would agree. They have spent a lot of money. I think they need about 20 new players because they're not very close.
That's what you think. Mike Hubbard at MHub513. With Marty Brenneman's career coming to an end in Cincinnati, I'm curious to know what your top five all-time announcer rankings are.
Yeah, peek behind the curtain. When I sent the rundown to Troy this morning, he sent me that possible question, and I wrote back, I'm like, no, I'm not going to go with that one today. That's like, you know how yesterday I asked Bruce Bochy to pick among his former players. It was like picking among children. A lot of these people are friends of mine. I'm not doing it. I'm not answering that question. I'd say Vin Scully is one, and after that, use your imagination.
Oh, Buster, you're no fun. Thank you for the tweets this morning, everyone. Keep them coming every day. Use the hashtag BleacherTweets.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jessica Mendoza, Jesse Rogers, Paul Ambikides, and Troy Farkas. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.